But instead, the breakup of the marriage and the public recriminations helped lead to the most serious debate about the future of the monarchy in recent times. Diana was left isolated, as something of a tragic figure.
Howard Philpott, looking back at the life of Diana, Princess of Wales, who died of injuries sustained in a car crash in Paris. And we're going now to the French capital and joining our correspondent, Kevin Connolly. Kevin, some details about the car crash are clear enough that the accident took place in a tunnel, for example, but are we any clear about exactly how it was caused?
I don't think we are. I mean, the police are now openly saying it was a high-speed car crash. They have arrested seven paparazzi photographers who were in hot pursuit of the Princess of Wales and Dodi El Fayed in this car. I think for the moment you have to draw your own conclusions on that. As we've talked through the night, the story has fluctuated. Details are always slow to emerge about exactly what has happened. But the broad outline the police have offered, that's how the accident happened, that somehow this hot pursuit forced the car to go at a high speed, led to it going out of control and smashing into a wall in the tunnel. That hasn't changed as the night has gone on. And really, anyone who's seen the car itself with the roof smashed down to bonnet level and the bodywork of a very large and powerful car crushed hopelessly can deduce for themselves the extraordinary violence of the impact and, as we now tragically know, the very serious extent of the injuries which the Princess of Wales died of a short time ago and which killed Dodi El Fayed and the driver of the car immediately.
And yet perhaps the surprise in all this is that those who are regularly close to the Princess of Wales and look after her movements must be all too used to the activities of these paparazzi, these freelance press photographers.
Well, I think the exact nature of their activity changes from time to time. The truth is that you have a kind of paparazzi feeding frenzy after the extraordinary international impact that the photographs of the Princess of Wales and Dodi El Fayed on holiday in the south of France have had. They are a guaranteed front page hit for any freelance photographer. The going rate for these pictures can run into tens of thousands of dollars more for a really good picture. The pressure is intense. The interest in the Princess of Wales is always overwhelming, but of course, since the Dodi El Fayed story began, it has been almost greater than it's been for years, and so there is this incredible financial pressure. It pushes the behavior of the paparazzi, and it places public figures who are hounded almost to the point of persecution in danger, as we have now tragically seen.
Kevin, as Paris wakes up to this news, what is the early reaction from the government, also from the media?
The government have expressed their deep sympathy to the people of Britain, to the royal family, to the families of everybody else who was killed. Formal expressions of regret for the moment, but tinged in the case of the Prime Minister Lionel Jospin and the Interior Minister Jean-Pierre Chevènement, I think with real emotion. It was hard not to be moved by them declaring the grief that they felt, knowing themselves to be at the centre of this extraordinary international attention. The media, of course, for them, it is a story of overwhelming importance, but linking the government, the media, and the people that we've been speaking to on the streets of Paris already this morning, the same overwhelming sense that the reaction is more one of shock and disbelief than immediate grief. I think that will take time to come.
Kevin Connolly in Paris, thank you. And a short while ago, I spoke to Samuel Goldsmith, a journalist from the French radio station RTL, also in Paris. He'd earlier been at, or close certainly, to the scene of the accident, and he was also in touch with the hospital where Princess Diana was taken.
We know it. The chief of the reanimation at the hospital declared that the young woman died from a heart stop. Her heart just stopped beating after a lung hemorrhage. They tried to restart it during 2 hours, but it didn't work.
Now, Samuel, going back a few hours, I know that you were on or certainly close to the scene of the accident shortly after it occurred. Was it immediately obvious that this was serious?
It was obvious, but in a way, in a curious way, it was because a lot of policemen and fire workers were on the scene. That is unusual for a normal accident. The whole street was blocked. No car could go through. the two sides of the roads were trapped and no car could go through.
Now, we learned quite a long time before the death of Princess Diana that Dodi Al-Fayed had also died. How did this news come to you personally?
It came from, well, actually, I'm going to tell you, it came from rumors on the scene. A lot of people were there, a lot of journalists, always asking questions to the policemen. And, of course, news came out shortly. There were short news. We had to check it afterwards every time. But it came out pretty soon that Princess Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed were in the car, actually.
Now, we know that the police in Paris have detained several press photographers for questioning. There's one view, certainly, that the car was being chased by the paparazzi, the freelancers, that's to say, and that somehow or other, we're not clear how, the accident was caused by an interaction between them and the car. Can you shed any light on that?
That might be right. Seven persons are right now interrogated by the police, and I saw five motorbikes of pretty big motorbikes being towed out the bridge on a truck. They were...
This is 91.5 FM KNGA, home of the Splendid Table, Saturdays at noon. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. Join me as we explore the world of food, where it comes from, how to cook it, and the many ways it enriches our lives. The Splendid Table, Saturdays at noon on Minnesota Public Radio, KNGA.
The BBC World Service is distributed in the U.S. by PRI, Public Radio International, and is made possible by the Capital Group Companies, investing throughout the world for individuals and institutions.
And people beside me were just saying how possibly could have people been trapped in that car.
Samuel Goldsmith in Paris. It's almost exactly 06 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You're listening to the BBC World Service. The main news: Diana, Princess of Wales, the divorced wife of the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles, has died of injuries suffered in a car crash in Paris, in which her close friend Dodi Al-Fayed and the car's driver were also killed. The princess was taken alive from the wreckage of the car, but died some 4 hours later at a Paris hospital. Press photographers have been blamed for causing the fatal crash. Stephen Jessel reports from Paris.
Diana, Princess of Wales, died at a hospital in southern Paris around 4 a.m. She'd been taken there after the car in which she was travelling crashed at high speed shortly after midnight in a tunnel on the banks of the River Seine. Reports said that the car was being chased by freelance photographers eager to get pictures of her in the company of Dodi Al-Fayed, the son of the Egyptian owner of the Harrods store in London, Mohammed Al-Fayed. Persistent rumours in recent weeks had claimed the princess was romantically involved with Mr. Al-Fayed. The two had been pictured on holiday together and appeared to be close friends. Mr. Al-Fayed was killed in the crash, as was the driver of the car. A bodyguard was seriously injured. Reports suggest the car may have hit a wall and spun round. It was very badly damaged. The tunnel was closed for several hours after the accident as emergency crews tried to free people trapped in other vehicles involved in the accident. The princess and Mr. Al-Fayed had arrived in Paris a few hours earlier and had dined at the Ritz Hotel, which is owned by the Al-Fayed family. They appeared to be on their way to Mr. Al-Fayed's house in western Paris. Initial reports said the princess had suffered concussion, a broken arm, and cuts to her thigh, but it later emerged that she'd sustained serious chest injuries and emergency surgery failed to save her life. Soon after the accident, the princess was visited by the French Interior Minister, Jean-Pierre Chevènement, who later broke the news of her death. Police have detained five press photographers and seized at least one motorcycle. The British ambassador to Paris, Sir Michael Jay, was also at the hospital and called the princess's death a terrible tragedy. Stephen Jessel
reporting there from Paris. And time now to catch up with the rest of the world news, and here's John Stone.
The leader of the outlawed Islamic Salvation Front in Algeria says he's willing to call for an immediate end to the violence that's racked the country for more than 5 years. His intervention follows the latest in the worst of a series of savage mass killings of civilians, blamed largely on Islamic militant groups. In a letter to the UN Secretary General, Kofi Annan, the front's leader, Sheikh Abbas Madani, said he was prepared to make the appeal to pave the way for serious dialogue to resolve Algeria's crisis. Here's our North Africa correspondent, Heba Saleh.
In his letter to the UN Secretary General, Sheikh Abessi says he's willing to appeal for an immediate end to the bloodshed with a view to preparing the ground for what he described as serious dialogue to end Algeria's crisis. The letter is a response to Mr. Annan's statement that words of condemnation of the massacres in Algeria were not enough, and that it was necessary to find quiet and discreet means to promote a peaceful solution. Mr. Annan's statement suggests that the UN may be preparing to take an active role to help resolve the conflict in Algeria. Speaking to the BBC, Sheikh Abessi said he was confident that armed Islamic militants around Algeria would heed his appeal for peace. Analysts believe that Sheikh Abessi retains a considerable degree of influence over the Islamic Salvation Army, AIS, one of the main groups fighting the government in Algeria.
The senior American envoy to Bosnia-Herzegovina, Robert Gelbart, has reaffirmed support for the position of the Bosnian Serb president, Biljana Plavšić, in her power struggle with supporters of her predecessor, Radovan Karadžić. Mr. Gelbart appeared with Mrs. Plavšić in Banja Luka after he had delivered a warning to her enemies in Pale to comply with the Dayton Peace Accords. Ola Guerin reports from Banja Luka.
The senior U.S. envoy, Robert Gelbart, sat around the table for talks with leaders he has already called liars using terrorist tactics. The message was that they must get into line or face what he called the most serious consequences imaginable. Washington, he said, had run out of patience. After the talks, key Karadžić loyalist Momcilo Krajišnik said they had heard the message, but threats wouldn't work. History shows that threats alone have had little effect here in the past. The international community may have to do more than talk tough if it wants to subdue the hardliners in Pale. After his trip to the Karadžić stronghold, Robert Gelbart came here to Banja Luka to meet the elected president Biljana Plavšić. She may not like the Dayton Agreement, but she accepts it, and Washington is backing her to the hilt.
King Norodom Sihanouk of Cambodia has offered to mediate in peace talks between the country's warring factions, but he says this has already been rejected by the Prime Minister, Hun Sen. King Sihanouk said that if all parts of Cambodian society listened to him, a meeting could be organized immediately. Hun Sen deposed his senior co-prime minister, the king's son, Prince Norodom Ranariddh, last month, but Prince Ranariddh's forces are continuing to hold out around their last stronghold, the border town of Osmach. It's been announced in Havana that the Pope will hold a mass in the city's Revolution Square during his visit to Cuba next January. However, it was not clear whether President Fidel Castro will attend. The Pope is to spend nearly a week in Cuba and will celebrate mass in three other places in the southeast of the country. The announcement was made by the head of the Catholic Church in Cuba, Cardinal Jaime Ortega, who was addressing hundreds of young people in one of the biggest churches in Havana. And that's the news summary.
Thank you, John. And we're going back to the main news. It's been announced that Diana, Princess of Wales, has died after a car crash in Paris, in which her companion, Dodi El Fayed, was also killed. The princess, the divorced wife of the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles, was 36. Her death was announced in the French capital, where the British ambassador is Sir Michael Jay.
Tonight's accident is a terrible tragedy. The death of the Princess of Wales fills us all with deep shock and with deep grief. And our thoughts and our prayers are with her family and her friends, and with the family and friends of the others who died in the accident. The Queen and the Prince of Wales and the Prime Minister have been informed of the accident and of the death of the Princess of Wales. I should like to take this opportunity to thank the Minister and the French authorities and the medical team here at this hospital for all they have done tonight at the time of this terrible tragedy. Thank you.
The British ambassador in Paris, Sir Michael Jay. It was shortly after midnight when the crash occurred, killing Princess Diana, her companion Dodi Al-Fayed, and the man driving the car. A bodyguard also in the vehicle was reported to be seriously injured. The accident took place in a traffic tunnel in a fashionable district towards the west of the city. An American tourist, Mike Walker, came across the scene minutes later.
Well, we was coming from the Eiffel Tower, and we were coming down. He was coming one way, and we were coming down the hill in the traffic. It was a little traffic, so it was going slow there because the accident had just happened. And when we got there, we seen, you know, the car had flipped over and looked like it had hit another car. Looked like it had evidently hit the wall or something. The windshield was crashed in the front. And the people were looking like that they were bewildered. They couldn't get the people out, or, you know, they were dead. But if they hadn't got anybody out the car yet, the people were still in the car. People were standing around the car like bewildered, and people were standing around crying. You know, it was a rough accident.
Others among the scene were an American couple, Tom Richardson and Joanna Lowes.
We were walking along the Seine River, and we heard a huge explosion. It sounded like a huge gunshot. We knew it was a screech, and then it sounded like an explosion. And after that, we heard another screech and another car explosion, and it sounded like a car crash. We ran to the scene. We went down under the bridge.
I was the first one down in the tunnel, and my girlfriend and three other tourists stopped at the entrance of the tunnel and were slowing traffic down because the traffic was going about 60 miles an hour, and they were going to hit the Princess Di's car. So I and another gentleman ran into the tunnel to see if we could help anybody get out of the car.
Tom Richardson and Joanna Lowes there, and a reminder that you're tuned to the World Service of the BBC. Princess Diana, the divorced wife of the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles, was 36. Howard Philpott now looks back on her life.
In July 1981, a 20th century fairy tale came to life. A former nursery school teacher, Lady Diana Spencer, married the heir to the British throne, Prince Charles. The wedding was watched on television by over 700 million people from all parts of the world.
The bride is greeted by a fanfare sounded by the state trumpeters under the portico of St. Paul's.
Lady Diana was just 20 years old. It seemed like a fairy tale romance, partly because the couple's affection for each other, in interviews with the media, emerged far more naturally than with previous very formal royal relationships. It didn't seem to matter that Lady Diana was 12 years younger than her husband. In an interview given just after the announcement of their engagement in February 1981, Prince Charles revealed that he'd proposed to Lady Diana just before she went on a three-week holiday to Australia so that she could think it over while she was away. In fact, she accepted straight away, and the couple stayed in contact with each other by telephone while Diana was in Australia.
But it was quite difficult to get through on one or two occasions, because they'd had so many calls from the press in Australia saying that they were Buckingham Palace. Or me, that when I rang saying it was me, the man said the other end, "How do I know who you are?" So I said, "Well, you don't, but I am," in a rage.